Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, August 4th, 2022. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline from today's paper is County Drops Conduit Plan. The Dubuque County Supervisors vote 2-1 to stop developing the Middle Mile Broadband Fiber Proposal by Benjamin Fisher. The Dubuque County Board of Supervisors, split 2-1, told staff to stop developing a proposal that would have led to a countywide, county-owned line of conduit to carry high-speed internet fiber west from the city of Dubuque. County Information Technology Director Nathan Gilmore had spent 18 months originating and then, per supervisor's request, fleshing out his pitch to use millions of dollars from the county's American Rescue Plan Act appropriation to build the project either along the Heritage Trail or Old Highway Road. His plan would have connected the county's own facilities to anchor institutions, municipal, health, or education facilities along a central east-west line with county-owned conduit to carry fiber for the county, but also to be leased by internet providers. "We gain resiliency for the partners," he said. "They will then have additional fiber runs to back their networks. If it gets cut, you're talking an outage until you can repair it. We, the county, get to reduce our long-term costs over the next 50 years as we continue to have our assets online. We can also do security cameras, traffic cameras, public Wi-Fi. It opens us up to further promote services for the citizens." Supervisors had previously asked Gilmore to assess support for the proposal among internet providers in the area. On Monday, he brought letters of support from Alliant Energy, the Maquoketa Valley Electric Cooperative, I'm On Communications, and C-Comelec Services. "We have stakeholders who are interested in this concept, exploring it further with the county," Gilmore said. At Monday's meeting, Supervisor Ann McDonough remained a supporter and advocate of the Middle Mile Broadband Fiber Project. "I hear the anecdotal evidence that there's trouble in the county," she said. "Certainly our school district, West Dubuque, has had trouble with it. I think Middle Mile is a project we should be supporting. It drives competition as well. If we are there with Middle Mile, then if somebody is paying whatever their monthly bill is in Farley or unincorporated areas, we're working toward creating a field where other players can exist." But Supervisors Harley Potoff and Jay Wickham remained unconvinced. "We've had some good studying and good conversation," Wickham said, "but it's coming up short for me right now to pull the trigger." Since Gilmore first presented the proposal, the Board of Supervisors has allocated nearly all of the county's $19 million from ARPA to community nonprofit projects, knowing the Middle Mile proposal was on the table, as was often mentioned by McDonough. "You offered up good solutions, good ideas," Wickham said. "The community did as well. We said yes to those 47 already. So the bulk of the funding is gone." The first step toward Middle Mile was a broadband network gap analysis and master plan. It would cost $50,000 and take 6 months. Gilmore said that would still be essential if the county wanted to be considered for other federal grant money to pursue fiber initiatives. "This study is very important, in my opinion, to go after future grants with any hope of scoring high enough to get anything, but also to make better decisions down the road," he said. "This will help our private sector, too. This will help our cities." McDonough argued strongly in favor of at least granting that request. "We are living in a time when there's billions of dollars available to accelerate this kind of technology in counties around the country," she said. "I'm not prepared to say that Dubuque County is not going to be engaged in infrastructure building for broadband when that doesn't give us access to grant application on behalf of our citizens to take advantage of this unprecedented federal money. We have to get started because we're not going to know if we need to invest major money or we're missing out on opportunities." ARPA contained specific funds for rural broadband expansion. and the bipartisan infrastructure bill promised Iowa a minimum allocation of $100 million to ensure high-speed internet coverage statewide, according to a new White House fact sheet. Wickham was unconvinced, given that Gilmore acknowledged federal funding would be difficult to get even with the plan if they didn't have a project and partnerships in place. Potthoff, though, joined McDonough in supporting the study. "I would be in favor of moving forward with the study to get the information we need," he said, "but I agree with Jay that I don't see us dumping millions of dollars in this." Wickham said he would be closer to supporting an approach to broadband access expansion, largely driven by the private sector. "I think if we went to one of those private providers and said, 'Hey, we'd like to partner with you on some federal grants,' they'd all go, 'Sure, as long as I don't have to do a lot of work and pay for it all,'" he said. "That's happening right now with other counties." The Board of Supervisors will formally vote on Gilmore's plan and assessment proposal at an upcoming meeting. The next story is "For the Love of the Game." Young area baseball and softball players share their memories, by Grace Neeland. All great ball players have to start somewhere, maybe even right here in the tri-state area. Every year, thousands of kids and teens flock to baseball fields across the tri-states to perfect pitches and try to hit home runs. There, they learn about teamwork, communication, and the value of hard work. Ahead of next week's Major League Baseball game at the Field of Dreams, the Telegraph Herald sat down with some of these local youth players to talk about their favorite memories and experiences with the game. Here's what they had to say. "The teamwork, pace of play, and mental aspects are my favorite. It's about knowing what to do in each situation and seeing the field in a way that other people don't." And that's by Spencer Meyer, 13, of Dubuque. "My favorite part is probably traveling around the U.S. and meeting new friends. We went down to Florida and we won the tournament. I was really excited, kind of shocked." And that's from Frankie Welp, 12, of Dickeyville, Wisconsin. "I kind of just like the atmosphere of playing with a great group of guys. It's a great game to be part of, and it's kind of what I grew up in. You learn to love the game all those years playing it." And that's from Aaron Savory, 17, of Dubuque. "I like the experience it gives me and meeting new people and getting to travel with my friends." That's from Cole Reimer, 13, of Piasta, Iowa. "I like that you get to work as a team and have some competition to keep you going." And that's from Jacob Benson, 14, of Galena, Illinois. "It gives you a lot of good skills for life, a good attitude, good communication skills, and good teamwork." And that's from Cohen Dara, 13, of Dubuque. "It's really fun when it's a close game. You want to be the one to make the big play and hear your teammates cheering for you." That's from Evan McClemon, 13, of Dubuque. Meredith Horner, 18, of Dubuque, says, "My favorite part of playing softball is getting to know all the upperclassmen before me and all the underclassmen that came in after me. They're a bunch of girls I wouldn't have gotten to know very well otherwise, and we all share a love for a game and share a love for each other." Maddie Harris, 17, of Dubuque, says, "Softball is a different game than some sports in the aspect that we play on grass and dirt, so not every ball is going to be the same. There's so much failure in it, but when it goes well, it's such a good feeling, even if it's not always perfect." Allie Barth, 7, of Platteville, Wisconsin, says, "I have a memory of when I was playing t-ball and my uncles were watching me, and when I tried to swing at the ball really hard, I fell over." And Jackson Sogling, 10, of Dubuque, says, "There was one time when they hit the ball way out and I caught it. It was really tense, but fun too. Before the game, I just really warm up for a little bit so I'm ready to hit it or when I catch the ball. Then I'm just ready to cheer and I cheer on my teammates when they hit too. And that's from Owen Barth of Platteville, Wisconsin. Peyton Guile, 15, of Dickeyville, Wisconsin, said, "My favorite softball memory is getting closer with my dad because he catches for me a lot. He actually got me pitching. He would work with me in our backyard all the time before I started pitching in games, and it really got me interested in the sport." Grant Rawling, 10, of Dubuque, says, "Baseball is all about having fun with my friends. There was one time last year where my friend and I threw a combined no-hitter." And Roman Romer, 14, of Galena, Illinois, says, "My favorite memory is probably my very first home run when I was 10. I was up, the wind was blowing out, and when I hit it, it went over the fence." Everett Schroeder, 10, of Keeler, Wisconsin, says, "You should always be paying attention because someone could throw the ball your way at any time." Isabel Pfeiffer, 18, of Bellevue, Iowa, says, "To any younger player thinking of starting, I would say, just put your entire heart into it. Sports are one of the most things you can do in the world. If you put your whole heart into it, you can make the most of any situation." Daniel Bitter, 10, of Dubuque, says, "It's really fun, and once you try it, you're going to fall in love with it for sure." Nate Lehman, 8, of Dyersville, Iowa, says, "Once you hit the ball, you don't watch the ball. You watch the first baseman, and you keep on running." Brooks Fry, 8, says, "Have fun and just play the game." Bentley Woodward, 11, of Dubuque, says, "It takes time. There might be people who are better than you, but just keep trying. Keep it up and don't get down on yourself, and also set goals for yourself," says Owen Heffel, 14, of Galena, Illinois. "Have fun, but don't talk back to the ump, or you could get kicked out." And that's from C.J. Bing, 10, of Dubuque. And Kaylee Hodgson, 18, of Dubuque, says, "The most important thing is to have fun. Put in the work to learn the little things, and once you learn them, put in the time to really get it down, and it'll all work out." The last story from the front page is titled "City Grants to Assist Small Businesses" by Joshua Irvine. There was neither a butcher, a baker, nor a candlestick maker among them, but the city of Dubuque believed they had something to see. For the second year, the city of Dubuque issued grants of up to $3,000 to low and moderate income small business owners to help them maintain and grow their businesses. The program also offers mentorship and personal and professional counseling through several affiliate partners, including Northeast Iowa Community College, the Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce, and Fountain of Youth. To qualify, business owners must make 80% or less of the area median income and live within city limits. It's money that's meant to be a hand up in the short term and is meant to lead to success in the long term through those mentoring sessions, City Economic Development Director Jill Connor said. This year's 7 recipients included a barber, a cleaning service operator, an independent farmer, and the proprietor of a bounce house rental service. Current grant recipients met with some of last year's 10 grantees, as well as city officials and business leaders at NICC on Wednesday evening to offer their experiences as well as words of encouragement. "It's exciting and scary, and those feel exactly the same, so go with excited," Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Molly Grover told the new grantees. Last year's recipients offered their own experiences on how the funding had helped their businesses to grow. Danielle Stowell of Wicked River Event Productions said the extra cash helped her to hire a part-time employee for the first time. "When you wear all the hats and do all the things, letting go of control is very hard," Stowell said. "Funding gave me just enough of a cushion to take that risk." She said being able to delegate work to a second employee has effectively doubled her business in the past year. Often, past recipients talked up the importance of the business and personal mentoring. While the money was what attracted Tanisha Fraser of Style to Perfection Salon to the program, she said the mentoring and teaching on financial management and tools like Microsoft Excel helped her more. "I did the grant program to receive the money, but I got a lot of education," she said. Lou Gerdeman of Lou Supply Company said the financial support as well as mentoring through Fountain of Youth Partners in Change program helped her manage the economic stress of the COVID-19 pandemic as well as a personal quarter-life crisis. "If you don't have your head on straight, your business isn't going to be effective," Gerdeman said. "Having someone believe in me that way helped me believe in myself, too." According to Connors, most of the grant money last year went toward paying rent or mortgages, and that would prove to be true at least for Jaquise Malone, a barber and full-time student at Capri College, who planned to take over a barbershop on 17th and Central that had closed during the pandemic. Randy Alexander of Super Clean Dubuque said he would use the money to buy floor scrubbers and buffers for his residential and commercial cleaning businesses. Up until then, he had to rent the equipment at a steep rate. "It's a whole new thing I'm going to be doing," Alexander said. "It's on another level." Elliot Johnson, owner of Rumble Tumble Bounce House Rentals, said he wanted to use the money to move beyond rentals to hosting his own events. The grant program is also meant to encourage networking, and the tail end of the event was dedicated to letting past and current grant owners converse and learn from one another. "A lot of having a successful business is knowing other business owners," Connor said. Toward the end of the evening, Johnson and Malone clustered at the corner of a long table as Johnson scrolled through listings for $1,000 bounce houses. Johnson talked of filling Comiskey Park with inflatable mazes and human hamster balls in a community event to encourage neighborhood kids to play outside, and recruiting his fellow grant recipients, "Get Keese out here cutting hair," to help. "I want to draw them out of the house with fun," he said. "I want to try to trick the kids into positivity." Turning to page 2, the headline at the top of the page is "Players and Officials Excited to Experience Field of Dreams Game" by Kaylee Reese. The dateline is Dyersville, Iowa. Star players and officials coming to Dyersville next week are hoping to experience the magic created by last year's big game at the iconic Field of Dreams site. Major League Baseball held a virtual press conference on Wednesday ahead of the Thursday, August 11th Major League Baseball game between the Chicago Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds at a stadium adjacent to the Field of Dreams movie site. "One of the things we heard a lot last year was, I think everyone heard a lot last year, was the magic that was created," said Jeremiah Yolcutt, MLB Vice President of Global Events. "The team has been hard at work to create that energy in 2022. Frank Schwindel, first baseman for the Cubs, and Kyle Farmer, shortstop for the Reds, spoke at the press conference about what they were looking forward to at the game. "We're going to walk through the corn and sit on the iconic bench out front," Schwindel said. "We're trying to soak it all in. For us, it's just another baseball game, but with the circumstances, it's going to be a fun one." Schwindel also noted that Iowa was passionate about baseball, even though the state does not have a Major League Baseball team. Farmer said he is a big fan of the 1989 Field of Dreams movie, which he rewatched earlier this week after finding it on TV. He added that he hoped to see actors from the film at the game. He also spoke about watching the inaugural Field of Dreams game last year. "Building a stadium in a place where, honestly, you're not supposed to build a stadium, and it looked awesome," he said. "Watching the game last year with the White Sox and the Yankees, watching Tim Anderson hit that walk-off home run was pretty special." Farmer also confirmed that the Reds will be playing in throwback 1919 uniforms for the Field of Dreams game. Harold Reynolds, a former Major League Baseball player and current analyst, will be calling the Tuesday, August 9th minor league game between the Quad City River Bandits and the Cedar Rapids Colonels. During the press conference, Reynolds recalled playing in the Quad Cities and Cedar Rapids during his time as a minor league player with the Midwest League. "It's a pretty cool idea for me to get a chance to call the game," he said. "It's quite a collection of talent, and I'm looking forward to that." April Brown, Major League Baseball Vice President of Social Responsibility, also said MLB will be honoring military personnel and veterans throughout the week of the game. "This includes Major League Baseball working with Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center to honor veterans in the hospital." Brown said Major League Baseball officials will be there on Thursday, August 11th, with MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred. "Whenever we have these really unique and fun opportunities within an area, it's really important to Major League Baseball to have a legacy and community impact that lives beyond the game," she said. The next story is, Dubuque County Fair reports more than 43,000 attendees, by Elizabeth Kelsey. Last week's Dubuque County Fair welcomed 43,756 attendees. The 69th annual event featured a host of livestock exhibitions, contests, concerts, and more. Fairgrounds General Manager Kevin Kotz said the busiest day of this year's fair was Tuesday, when just over 12,000 people attended. Fair admission was free on that day, including the evening's concert featuring Twitty and Lynn. The fair also saw more than 8,000 attendees on both Saturday and Sunday. Fair Board President Tony Steffen, who was on the grounds throughout the week, said the demolition derby on Sunday attracted a particularly large crowd. "I haven't seen those stands filled with that much in a very long time," he said. "I don't think there was another seat you could find in the stands." County rap duo The Lax and country singer Chase Matthew headlined a concert Thursday night for a crowd of 1,712. The following evening, 1,012 people attended the Pop 2000 tour hosted by Chris Kirkpatrick of NSYNC fame, and featuring artists O-Town, Ryan Cabrera, David Cook, and LFO. Those numbers represent a decline from last year's concert attendance. At the 2021 fair, 3,685 people watched the Thursday country concert with Chris Lane and Casey Musingman, while Friday's rock concert featuring Queensrÿche and Slaughter had 1,377 attendees. Overall, attendance fell below last year's numbers, which topped 50,000 for the week. However, Kott said, rather than focusing solely on attendance numbers, he prefers to look at the experience the fair provided. "The attendees I worry about are the ones that were here. Were they well taken care of? Did they have a good time? Did they feel they got their money's worth?" he said. "Attendance will come and will change and grow with time as we improve our services to customers." Ground acts, including magic shows, axe throwing, and game shows like Family Feud, were popular with attendees, according to Steffen. "When we talked to those entertainers, they said they were just swamped," Kott said. "The axe throwing was always busy when I went by." A new event for the Dubuque Fair, Mutton Busting, drew fairgoers of all ages on Saturday, and Kott said other livestock events also were popular. All the shows were well attended, from the open class shows like the beef show to all the other 4-H shows, Kott said. Looking ahead to next year, both Kotz and Steffen said fair organizers might look to bring a rock concert to the main stage. "We always do a night of country, and since our area is very heavy on the countryside when it comes to fairs, we like to offer the additional entertainment of a rock act," Steffen said. Those interested in sharing feedback or suggestions for the fair can call 563-588-1406. Email dbqfair@dbqfair.com or submit a message online at dbqfair.com. Turning to the news in brief, East Dubuque man wins $10,000 at the Mega Millions lottery prize. Dateline, Piasta, Iowa. An East Dubuque, Illinois man won $10,000 with a Mega Millions ticket he purchased in Dubuque County. Jacob Walsh, 34, purchased a ticket from the Quick Stop in Piasta, matching 4 of 5 white balls and the Mega Ball in the July 26th Mega Millions drawing, according to a press release from Iowa Lottery. The release states that Walsh realized he had won the prize while checking his ticket as he waited for his dinner to cool. "I just had my lottery ticket sitting on the table, so I decided to look the numbers up," Walsh said in the release. "I was like, oh, I got 4 of them, plus the Mega Ball. But you probably have to have them in order. I downloaded the app and scanned the ticket, and it told me it was $10,000. The ticket was one of a number off. The ticket was one number off from that night's $830 million jackpot. Walsh, a project manager for a tool manufacturer, said he plans to put his winnings toward his family's boating fund. The next story is 2 additional local COVID-19-related deaths. 2 additional COVID-19-related deaths were reported in 10 local counties from July 27th to Wednesday. The Telegraph Herald continues to track local COVID-19 data, now publishing updates on Thursdays. Related deaths. During the 7-day period, 1 additional local COVID-19-related death was reported in Grant County, Wisconsin, and another in Crawford County, Wisconsin. Hospitalizations. There were 10 people with COVID-19 hospitalized Wednesday at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital and Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, 2 fewer than 1 week earlier. COVID-19 community level. As of Wednesday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention rated the COVID-19 community level as high in Dubuque and Jackson counties in Iowa, Crawford, Grant, Iowa, and Lafayette counties in Wisconsin, and Joe Davies County in Illinois. It was medium in Delaware, Clayton, and Jones counties in Iowa. Because of the rise in community levels, effective today, Regional Medical Center in Manchester, Iowa, is reinstating universal masking at its facilities. All patients, staff, visitors, and volunteers will be required to wear masks. Authorities ID 2 killed in Dubuque County crash. Dateline Farley, Iowa. Authorities have released the names of 2 people killed when a vehicle rear-ended a sanitation vehicle Tuesday on U.S. Highway 20 near Farley. Miranda L. Held, 20, and Samuel J. Link, 21, both of Cedar Falls, were killed in the crash, according to the Iowa State Patrol. A report states that Held was driving with Link east on U.S. Highway 20 near mile marker 300 at 5:13 p.m. when she attempted to pass vehicles by entering a turning lane and rear-ended an eastbound sanitation vehicle driven by Adam R. Linden, 32, of Sherrill, Iowa, that was waiting to turn north onto Old Castle Road. The report states that Farley Fire and EMS, the police departments of Farley and Dyersville, the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department, and the Dubuque County Medical Examiner's Office assisted at the scene. And the police report? The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported Carolyn M. Jones, 58, of 1903½ Jackson Street, was arrested at 5:28 a.m. Wednesday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging possession of methamphetamine. Manda J. Breimeyer, 36, of 1551 Bluff Street, number 2, was arrested at 7:37 p.m. Tuesday on charges of 3 counts of assault, violation of individual rights, and second-degree harassment. Court documents state that Breimeyer threatened Gadiha C. Smith, 24, Jana B. Wortham, 22, and Sean S. Johnson, 24. All of 1551 Bluff Street, number 4. Brian M. Tracht, 23, of 675 West 11th Street, was arrested at 11:30 a.m. Tuesday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging failure to comply with the sex offender registry. The City of Dubuque reported the theft of a city street sign worth $2,500 between July 24th and Tuesday from the intersection of West 3rd and Main Streets. Kathy S. Lohman, 67, of 4190 Steamboat Lane, reported a wire fraud case resulting in the theft of $1,300 between July 25th and Tuesday. And finally, Erica R. Fry, 27, of 3060 Kaufman Avenue, reported the theft of a smartphone and case worth $930 between July 23rd and 24th from a store in the 2500 block of Northwest Arterial. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, August 4th, 2022, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Next, we'll turn to today's obituaries. John Westhoff, New Vienna, Iowa. John Daniel Westhoff, Danny, passed away peacefully July 16th, surrounded by family, in his home at the age of 90. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Friday, August 5th, 2022, at St. Boniface Catholic Church in New Vienna. A massive Christian burial will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, August 6th, at St. Boniface Catholic Church in New Vienna, with full burial in the church cemetery, where military honors will be will be accorded by the VFW Post 7736 and the New Vienna Fire Department and Delaware County Honor Guard will conduct Danny's last call. The Reverend Tyler Raymond will officiate with the Reverend Carl Reese Kahn celebrating. James R. White, Galena, Illinois. James R. Snapper White, 79 of Galena, passed away Friday, July 29th, 2022, at his home. A funeral service will be held at noon Saturday, August 6th, 2022, at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena, where friends may call after 10 a.m. until the time of service. The burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery, Galena. Military honors will be accorded graveside by Galena VFW Post 2665 and American Legion Post 193. The family wishes to extend a special thank you to Drs. Wells, Farrell, Morgan, Erig, and their staff, Hospice of Dubuque, especially Jessica Medical Associates Oncology, especially Jenny and his phone buddies, and all his family and many friends that visited. Your kindness during this difficult time will never be forgotten. The family requests donations are made to Hospice of Dubuque in the memory of Jim. Timothy P. Parsons, Platteville, Wisconsin. Timothy P. Parsons, 75, of Platteville, died on Thursday, July 28, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 5th, and from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, August 6th, at Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville, where services will follow. Leo F. Scanlon, Benton, Wisconsin. Leo F. Scanlon, 84, of Benton, died on Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. Visitation will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 10th, at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Benton, and from 9:30 to 10:45 a.m. Thursday, August 11th, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Benton, where a massive Christian burial will take place at 11 a.m. Burial will be in St. Mary's Catholic Church Cemetery in Fenimore. M. Georgine Pettinger, Worthington, Iowa. M. Georgine Pettinger, 101, of Worthington, died on Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. Visitation will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 6th, at St. Paul's Catholic Church in Worthington, where services will take place at 11 a.m. Burial will follow in the church cemetery. Rife Funeral Home of Cascade is assisting the family. Jerry D. Oxenford, Platteville, Wisconsin. Jerry D. Oxenford, 76, of Platteville, died on Friday, July 29, 2022. Visitation will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, August 7th, at Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville, and from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday, August 8th, at St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church in Cuba City, where a massive Christian burial will follow. Richard Devaney, Sr. Richard D. Dick Devaney, Sr., 95, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022, at the Hawkeye Care Center in Dubuque. Visitation will be from 9 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, August 6th, 2022, at St. Patrick Catholic Church. In Dick's honor, the family requests bright-colored casual dress. The massive Christian burial for Dick will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 6th, 2022, at St. Patrick Catholic Church with Father Dennis Quint as the celebrant. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. Full military honors will be rendered by the Dubuque Marine Corps League. Martha M. Walcall. Martha M. Walcall, age 72, of Dubuque, passed away at 6:50 p.m. on Monday, August 1st, 2022, at Mercy One, Dubuque. To celebrate Martha's life, family and friends may visit from 9 to 10:15 a.m. on Saturday, August 6th, 2022, at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church, 1755 Delhi Street. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, August 6th, 2022, at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church, with Jeff Durham officiating. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting the family. Paul R. Conlon. Paul R. Conlon, age 69, of Dubuque, passed away unexpectedly at 10:50 a.m. on Saturday, July 30th, 2022, at the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics. In keeping with Paul's wishes, a celebration of his life will be held at a later date. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting the family. Brenda M. Bloch. Brenda Mary Bloch, 89, passed away peacefully on Monday morning, August 1st, at Luther Manor in Dubuque, Iowa. Brenda was born in London, England, on February 19, 1933, to Colin and Mary Jackson. Brenda had no children, but she was very close to her two nephews, David and Peter, and lavished them with the same love and attention a mother would give. A memorial service will be held at a later date, to be followed by burial in St. Paul's UCC Cemetery in Monee, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, Brenda requested that memorial gifts be made to Prison Fellowship. The phone number is 800-206-9764. The address is Prison Fellowship, P.O. Box 1550, Merrifield, Virginia, 22116. Online condolences may be left for the family at EngelhoffSiegerCasper.com. Brenda's family would like to give special thanks to dear friends Dawn, Barbara, Dawn, Linda, and Lois. These friends were her angels and gave her much help and comfort, especially during her final months. Robert M. Miller, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Robert M. Bob Miller, 92, of Hazel Green, died on Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. Visitation will be held from 8:45 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, August 6th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Cincinnati, where a massive Christian burial will take place at 11 a.m. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque, Illinois, is assisting the family. Robert R. Wolf. Robert R. Wolf, 90, of Dubuque, died Sunday, July 31st, 2022, at home. Funeral services will be held at 12 p.m. Saturday, August 6th, 2022, at St. Matthew Lutheran Church. A visitation will be held from 9 to 11:45 a.m. Saturday at the church. Military honors will be accorded. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery at a later date. Online condolences may be left for the family at EngelhoffSiegertCasper.com. Beverly A. Pelton, Belmont, Wisconsin. Beverly Ann McGowan Pelton of Belmont, Wisconsin, died peacefully on August 1st, 2022, in Mineral Point, Wisconsin, at age 87. She was born on February 20th, 1935, in Platteville, Wisconsin, to Leo and Hazel McGowan. We are sad to say goodbye, but know that she will always be with us, smiling and comforting us with her unconditional love. Massive Christian burial will be held at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, August 6th at St. Philomena Catholic Church, Belmont, Wisconsin, with visitation from 9 to 11 a.m. Burial will be at Resurrection Cemetery, Belmont. The Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville is serving the family. In lieu of flowers, memorials to the family for distribution to charities of choice. Online condolences can be made at melbyfh.com. William F. Graves, Sr. William F. Graves, Sr., 80, of Dubuque, died on Monday, August 1st, 2022. No services will be held. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. Henry D. Kivlahan, Burlington, Iowa. Born February 13, 1937, in Detroit, Michigan, he was the son of Henry Damien and Margaret Helena Foley Kivlahan. On September 23, 1972, he married Patricia Neff at St. John's in Burlington, Iowa. The graveside committal service for Mr. Kliven will be at 10 a.m. Friday, August 5th, 2022, at Sacred Heart Cemetery with the Very Reverend Father Marty Goetz officiating. Prue Funeral Service is in care of the arrangements. Condolences can be sent to the family by visiting Henry's obituary at pruefuneral.com. And the funeral services. Bernard J. Averkamp, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9 a.m. to noon today. Hodenshield Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City. Service, 12:30 p.m. today, St. Peter's Catholic Church, Elk Grove Township. Jean M. Black, Dubuque. Visitation, 9 to 9:30 a.m. today. Mary Frances Clark Chapel, Mount Carmel Bluffs. Sharing of Memories, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. today at the chapel. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. today at the chapel. Fred H. DeShaw, Worthington, Iowa. Visitation, 9 to 10 a.m. today. Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Service, 10:30 a.m. today. St. Paul Catholic Church, Worthington. Michael J. Dillon, Dubuque. Visitation, 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, August 7th. Meadows Golf Club, 6525 Clover Lane. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. Monday, August 8th, Church of the Resurrection. Mary Benjamin Duchner, Dubuque. Visitation, 3:30 to 8 p.m. today, with awake service at 7 p.m. Sacred Heart Chapel, Sisters of the Presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Service, 11 a.m. Friday, August 5th, at the chapel. Elizabeth Eck, Oregon, Wisconsin. Service, noon, Sunday, August 7th, St. Patrick's Catholic Church, Epworth, Iowa, followed by a reception in the church hall. Georgianne J. Felton, Dubuque. Celebration of Life, 2 to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 6th, Happy's Place, 2323 Rockdale Road. Isabel T. Iverson, Livingston, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life, 2 to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 6th, Happy's Place, 2323 Rockdale Road. Isabel T. Iverson, Livingston, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, August 5th, Soman Larson Funeral Home, Montfort. Carol M. Kanak, Jefferson, Texas. Visitation, 4 to 6 p.m. today and from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, August 5th, St. John's Catholic Church, Patch Grove, Wisconsin. Massive Christian burial, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Ryan R. Cluck, Dubuque. Celebration of Life, 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. Friday, August 5th, Dubuque Golf and Country Club. Mary Lackaman, Dyersville, Iowa. Visitation, 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, August 5th, Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Massive Christian burial, 11 a.m. Friday, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Virginia Lammer, Dubuque. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 5th. Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Mass of Christian Burial, 10 a.m. Saturday, August 6th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. John A. Meyer, Jr., Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday, August 6th. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Lancaster. Kathleen M. Musel, Stockton, Illinois. Visitation, 3 to 6 p.m. today. Miller Steinke Funeral Home, Scales Mound. Donald L. Osterhaus, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Visitation, 5 to 8 p.m. Sunday, August 7th. Garrity Funeral Home, Prairie du Chien. Service, Monday, August 8th, St. Gabriel's Catholic Church, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. John C. Paisley, Dubuque, Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today, Church of the Resurrection. Dean F. Roby, Dubuque, Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today, Egelhoff, Seeger, and Casper, Westview Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road. Services, 11 a.m. Friday, August 5th, at the funeral home. Francis J. Rundy, Hazel Green, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9 to 9:45 a.m. Saturday, August 20th, St. Joseph's Catholic Church, Cincinnati. Service, 11 a.m. Saturday, at the church. Lowell J. Shin, Platteville, Wisconsin. Visitation, 10 a.m. to noon today, United Methodist Church, Platteville. Service, noon today, at the church. Andrew H. Smythe, Monona, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9 a.m. to 12:15 p.m., Friday, August 5th. Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Benton. Service, 12:30 p.m., Friday, at the funeral home. Karen N. Steffen, Livingston, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m., Friday, August 5th. Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville. Lois M. Sweeney, Dubuque. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m., Friday, August 5th, Church of the Resurrection. Dale A. Walker, Elizabeth, Illinois. Celebration of Life, 1 to 2:30 p.m., Sunday, August 7th, Law Jones Funeral Home, Elizabeth. Service, 2:30 p.m. Sunday at the funeral home. Philip L. Williams, Russellville, Arkansas. Service, 10 a.m. Saturday, August 6th, Hillside Cemetery, Platteville, Wisconsin. And Jeffrey S. Witzel, Muskota, Wisconsin. Visitation, 2 to 4 p.m. today, Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory, Bloomington. Service, 4 p.m. today at the funeral home. Turning to the sports page, the headline is focused on next step. Beckman grad Schmidt ready to prove herself at Iowa State by Steve Ortman. Kirsten Schmidt held a significant amount of faith in Iowa State University. The Beckman Catholic All-State hitter committed to the Cyclones in July 2020 in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic and unable to make an official visit. Thankfully, when she finally did make that visit, she knew she made the right choice. "I wanted to end up somewhere close to home," said Schmidt, who earned a two-year scholarship with the Cyclones that has the potential to become a full four-year ride. "The coaching staff was so welcoming, and they really treated me like they really wanted me. When I was finally able to have an official visit, I just loved it. Just being on campus, I knew this was the right place for me. I knew I had made the right decision." Following a stellar senior season with the Trailblazers this past fall, the 6-foot Schmidt has spent all summer in Ames working out with her new teammates in preparation to get things started with the first official practice on August 8th. "During the summer, it's been a lot of fun," said Schmidt, an Epworth, Iowa native. "We have workouts in the mornings and then open gym led by the seniors at night. The team has been very open and welcoming and are all very nice girls. They've brought all of us freshmen in very well. It's a very close team as we hang out outside of volleyball, and the summer's gone by too quick." Schmidt recalls watching her older sister Keely play volleyball and becoming interested in taking up the sport. She says seventh grade is when she really developed her love of the game and her skills on the court, and Schmidt was moved up to the Trailblazers varsity roster as a sophomore. Beckman Catholic finished that season as Class 2A state runner-up. Schmidt was second on the team in kills behind Jada Wills with 260 and earned a spot on the state all-tournament team. Schmidt, who was named first team all-state that year, also played two seasons with Club Iowa Juniors out of Waterloo, and it was before her junior season that she committed to the Cyclones. I had heard of her at a high-performance summer regional training team and how she was really turning heads, said Iowa State coach Christy Johnson Lynch, who will be leading the Cyclones for the 18th season this fall. That was maybe 4 years ago, and she was so athletic. We've been watching her a long time, and we're really impressed with her athleticism, even at a young age. Schmidt certainly comes from an athletic family. Her father, Tim, played baseball at Kirkwood Community College and Iowa State, while her mother, Kim, played volleyball at UNC Greensboro and the University of Iowa. I always saw my older sister play and would play with her, and I just loved the adrenaline it gave me and feeling of scoring a point or getting a block, said Schmidt, who plans to major in marketing. It brings me so much joy and excitement. Schmidt didn't disappoint after her commitment, delivering 305 kills during her junior season, which ended in a regional loss, and receiving second-team All-State accolades. But it set the stage for a gigantic senior campaign that powered the Blazers back to state. Schmidt received elite All-State honors from the Iowa Girls Coaches Association to cap her final season, a 9-player roster comprised of players from all classes. She delivered 593 kills, ranking third in all of Iowa, and averaged 5.39 kills and 2.88 digs per set in helping lead the Blazers back to the state tournament, where they lost in the quarterfinals to Western Christian. Schmidt was named to the Class 2A All-Tournament team, was a back-to-back WAMAC Conference Player of the Year, and closed her 4 years at Beckman as the record holder in kills for a career 1,165, a season 593, and a match 32. I feel like I owe a lot of credit to my teammates, Schmidt said. I couldn't have done it without them pushing me in practice every day. I'm really proud of how I finished at Beckman, and to be considered one of the best players to play there is such a big honor. I couldn't have done it without my coaches and the work outside of volleyball, like lifting and the club season. I owe it all to that. Coming off a season and career that productive, the Cyclones sure are happy to have Schmidt when other suitors such as Drake, Creighton, Middle Tennessee State, and St. Cloud State were knocking on her door. We're pretty fired up, Johnson Lynch said. I think we do so well with players that have played in multiple sports in high school and haven't totally focused on volleyball. She's a state qualifier in track, and there's a lot of potential there still. She's an incredibly talented athlete with so much room for growth. Those are my favorite type of athletes to recruit and my favorite to work with. As practice begins with the Cyclones, Schmidt hopes it will become clearer what type of potential role she may play as a freshman. I'm really excited to get started, she said. When preseason comes around, it will definitely be challenging, but I'm excited for it. Getting in the gym this summer, what we have here, I can't wait to get in and start practice and build better relationships as a team. They have a lot of pin hitters, and they are looking at me in the middle of a little more, too. And I've been doing some training in the middle, and we'll be doing more of that in the preseason. While Schmidt is listed on the Cyclones roster as an outside hitter, right side, a position that's pretty deep on the roster, her athletic ability may be too elite to keep off the floor. She's played a few different things in her time, and I like to be creative with athletes and do a lot of different things, Johnson Lynch said. Try the middle and see where she seems to thrive and fit for us. I'm not exactly sure how we'll use her yet, but I'll know more over the next few weeks. I truly believe she can be great at anything given some time. Schmidt's ready to get started, and she's ready to earn it. It's going to be a challenge for sure, and that's very exciting, she said. I feel like being a versatile player is key to seeing the court, and I'm excited to see where the middle position could put me. My expectations are that I would like to see the court sometime during this season, and obviously I have to put in a lot of work still, but I'm really hoping to see the court. I'm going to work as hard as I can and try to make that happen. In youth fishing, the headline is Asbury Anglers Enjoy National Debut by Danny Miller. Will Oberhofer and Max Dressler waited nearly 10 months for their trek to Tennessee. The two fishing buddies representing Junior Dubuque Bass Club competed in the 2022 Bassmaster Junior National Championships July 29th and 30th at Carroll County 1,000-acre recreational lake in Huntington, Tennessee. For a duo that's only been fishing competitively for a couple of seasons, it was an eye-opening experience. The first day we got there, there were already a bunch of boats in the water, and that was full of boats, Oberhofer said. We got to experience what it was like to fish in a big tournament like that because we never have before. The pair qualified for nationals after winning their debut appearance in the Iowa Bass Nation Youth Salute State Tournament last September in record-setting fashion. Oberhofer, 14, and Dressler, 13, both of Asbury, Iowa, reeled in an Iowa State Tournament record 5-bass limit of 12.63 pounds. They didn't quite match that same type of success last week at Nationals, placing 54th out of 65 teams, but Dressler said the experience was invaluable and will only benefit the team in the future. It's just completely different fishing in that lake compared to the river here, Dressler said. I have never really fished in a lake like that before. It was a new experience for all of us. Friday's first day of competition began on a positive note for the duo when they were randomly selected as the number one boat to leave the dock. It kind of calmed the nerves down because we knew we could get to our spot first, Oberhofer said. When we were about to take off, they started announcing our names. Everyone started clapping and music was playing super loud. It was just really fun. Dressler said he and Oberhofer decided to leave it all out on the lake when choosing their destination. The spot we went to, it was either going to be hit or miss, Dressler said. We were either going to catch a big one or we weren't going to catch anything. It was a pretty well-known spot, so we needed to take that risk. I had a big bass break off at the boat, but that was about it. We could see that all of the fish were there, but they were just picky. Though the fish were stinging, the overall experience, which spanned 5 days on the lake in Tennessee, was a memorable one for the junior anglers. We didn't catch very many fish, and that's kind of how it was the entire tournament, but it was still really fun, Oberhofer said. We got to meet some people from different places like Canada, North Carolina, and Texas. And though it wasn't the grand first-place trophy, the Asbury duo brought home a plethora of goodies given to the participants at the pre-tournament banquet. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for August 4th, 2022. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.